substance equals burn. The propaganda's win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to 1 of 200, the Politics and Media Podcast. I'm joined for our midweek episode by Olivier Joutel. How you doing?
Kyle, I'm great, man. It's been too long. And I'm talking about dumb tech crypto shit. What else could
Fantastic.
What else can I want from life?
Yeah. That's why we bring you on. Just for people who haven't heard you on here before, what are your creds? What are your credentials?
Oh, damn. Online lurker? No. So I'm a communication studies lecturer down in Otsiputi, Dunedin at Otago. I guess in the last 10 years or so, I got pilled on sort of like tech and politics with the Internet Party. And this is wild, man. I think I may have told you this, but I saw Kim.com at the beach in St. Clair a couple weeks ago. It was like I had caught my white whale. You know what I mean? And you know what? It was very kind. And I was like, what's up, Kim? You know, you've actually been kind of influential in setting me on a journey about discovering like crypto and online politics and stuff. He's like, yeah, I was right. You know, if the New Zealand government had bought crypto, we would all be millionaires now. Anyway, whatever. Look, I'm sorry. I like having Kim around as an interesting character in New Zealand politics, and his politics are, you know, diabolical and whatever. But I, you know.
Yeah, I wonder whether he understood exactly what your interest in the stuff became.
It doesn't really matter, you know. You're in the presence of a big guy in that game. But yeah, no. Generally, I've been writing the last few years about the geopolitics of platforms and platform imperialism, and you know, like what that means in Aotearoa New Zealand. Like in 2013, our government departments basically issued what's known as like cloud first regulations, which is if you can, you must become a servant of Microsoft or Google or Amazon, and our national digital sovereignty is determined by those big players, right? I've had a criticism of the whole disinformation paradigm as far too limited in understanding how much we are, yeah, in a sense, dominated, colonized by American tech and powerless to do things with the national media and digital space that would be in the interests of us. And I've written a lot about crypto and blockchain and that stupid bullshit. And my latest stuff is on these venture capitalists that fly the banner of the network state. And they're very close to the Doge stuff and the Musk tech oligarchy stuff.
Wonderful. Well, that's some of what we're going to be talking about today. Just want to start with a quick intro for audience members that aren't across some of this highly Americanized language, right? You know, talking about Doge, talking about VC stuff. Another term that's been coming up a lot recently is DEI, being used more and more liberally, even just today, I think. What is it? It's Friday, the 7th of March, even just today, by Winston Peters, introducing a members bill to try and get rid of DEI in government departments or some shit. Taking these American terms and just throwing them about when they don't have a real context in New Zealand. But a lot of these people, and especially on the right and especially in media, who may or may not be right-wing, right? Like just because of the nature of their roles, are just completely immersed in this horrible politicized slop. And they're just like, oh, these are just terms. These are just terms that everyone knows. I'm just going to throw them out there and talk about them as if these are real and can be applied in the same way as they are in the United States.
So I feel like we used to have a way. I mean, again, I'm old. So back in like the aughts in sort of political science, like some people would talk about, quote, Americanization in politics or the presidentialization of politics.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we have sort of lost the ability to understand how we are in like this. Actually, Yevgeny Morozov described AI as a weapon of American super imperialism that has doomed us to the fate of being stuck interminably in like American culture wars. So, you know, New Zealand first leader Winston Peters is just, you know, cutting He's now just cutting and pasting from like the American lexicon of politics. These guys don't even have the dignity to develop the sort of a local reactionary politics. It's just sort of all sort of Fox News or AI slot. I mean, some of the stuff started with Fox News. Some of the stuff, and again, you know, right-wing networks and the Business Roundtable and Atlas and Taxpayers Union, like these are sort of like transmission belts for like language and discourse and political concerns and sort of like,
And outright policy sometimes.
right, copy pasta policy. And so here we have it, I guess. Like, if and it's wild how many sort of boomer or older New Zealanders that I've come across in my social sphere that listen to like Dan Bongino and start to like, you know, curse Nancy Pelosi. Like, come on.
Like, get
What
the
self,
shit.
yeah, what self-respecting kind of Kiwi are you when you are like giving a shit about American pundits and American politicians? Like, it's pathetic.
I
Like,
don't know, Dan Bongino is like the deputy director of the CIA now,
that's
right?
right. And it's so amazing. It's so good. There's that clip of him saying, so Epstein worked for like some Middle Eastern intelligence agency. Like, he doesn't even know. Like, yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, the podcasters are taking over. And but there is this like, yeah, I mean, it's not just Hollywood cultural product. The French in the 90s, they used to say le McDonaldization, you know, like, because the French are very sort of like culturally protective and think of themselves as superior to American culture. And we don't, somehow we don't understand that or some, and honestly, like, even amongst the sort of center left, there is an inferiority complex to like American tech and money. And that's not just, I guess that's not just cultural. That is like a structural, political, economic thing. So it's really hard to like break out of the, you know, that American cultural super imperialism. And you know, some, I've written about this a bit, but some researchers call it like a platform imperialism of like the way language and governance of, you know, the way Musk is like a quote champion of free speech, that these values are determined by the governance and laws of the platform, and then therefore become the way we inhabit and understand our social media spaces. So the DEI thing or the Doge thing are just products of that, right?
Yeah, and it's this combination, I think, you know, you mentioned this kind of sense of inferiority to American tech and discourse even as well, you know, prior or post the kind of West Wing shit, which you still hear like a whole bunch of people in the center left and liberals like, oh, I'm just such, I love West Wing. That's what my view of politics is. Like, okay, fuck you. Please have a grasp on reality. But alongside that, there's this real New Zealand exceptionalism as well, paired with a determination that, quote, that's just the way things are. Oh, you know, that's just how the market works. We have to respond to this stuff in this way because that's what the mores of society are right now. But don't worry, because what's happening in the US could never happen here. While at the same time, you've got the ACT Party and New Zealand First and all their outriders, plenty of whom are used to be quite a lot get quite a lot more mainstream media coverage and now aren't, because they are intentionally running under the radar. I think like Family First, for example, who have just adopted this shit wholesale from like Heritage 2025 or directly from Elon Musk or whatever other pundit. Ron DeSantis, I think, was a really early leader for policy that the ACT Party was wholesale adopting. I'm thinking around charter schools, for example. And so their audience here, you know, you mentioned people who are listening to Dan Bongino or whatever, are doing that to some extent. They have this core audience, among whom are themselves, who are just completely colonized by this American cultural hegemony.
How is Thomas Sowell the most quoted man on the internet? Like, you know, so for those who don't know, Thomas Sowell is an African American right wing sort of libertarian economist that, I guess, you know, whatever that sort of American infrastructure will trot out as the sort of exemplar of the dignity of work and the evil of sort of socialist redistributive programs and stuff. And like, again, I'm just encountering Kiwis talking about how Thomas Sowell is their favorite philosopher. And
I
I know that's
haven't seen that. That's
all right. Well, I mean,
horrific. Oh,
I kick around in some sort of like older and sort of like football circle, just sort of like normie circles,
yeah.
which is like good, because then like you can be like, hey, look, like whatever, I'm like the woke out of control academic, we can talk about this, it's fine, I'll tell you about what it is that we do here. And so like whatever, community sport is great is what I'm trying to say. It sort of keeps you connected to the whatever's going on out there. But yeah, like this is the question, like is Elon Musk like pilling himself? Like that's the sort of weird thing of like those who are in power are in charge of like hyper reality machines of sort of like, and now let me be wanky, online jouissance, or like, of like things that people enjoy transgressively and derive sort of like weird Freudio-Lacanian dark libidinal stuff from. And yet the people driving it, like an Elon Musk, is also sort of in this whatever hyper real delusion. And so it makes sense then that the political representatives that are riding these waves are themselves sort of, it would almost be comforting if they were like mercurial and tactfully just sort of like being manipulators. But like, no, they seem like they're also just kind of like seething hogs as well. Like, that's another sort of product of this. And I think, look, and I'm this is not an original insight, like there's not a lot to be gained from this traditional mode of like taking power and seeking office. Like, it's, running for prime minister or president is a competition to be the most hated person in the country. Like there is power there, like Trump is demonstrating that there is power, but it's almost like it's sort of detached from the way public office used to be part of, yes, you're assembling alliances and forces that will come to bear to like shape the polity in these ways that, is meaningful. It seems less and less meaningful, and so therefore attracts people seeking attention, or that people that are these, or the online hogs, for lack of a better way. I
Yeah,
said that, like, yeah.
I think I mentioned as well, just like at risk of again doing New Zealand exceptionalism, right? That here that is slightly different because of the executive powers that a ruling government has if they really want to fuck stuff up. Our government currently just able to just wholesale make these changes. It doesn't matter about the polity or bring anyone with them. They have a fair amount of power if they have a majority vote to shape things in a way that would ta maybe take a bit more capital in the US to do, which is what's happening, right? It's like this huge kind of billionaire takeover and a whole range of different networks doing the job over there. But let's move on to specifically what we're going to talk about today. That
Oh,
was
you know, Kyle, before you've been doing some great job covering the NZME stuff, which I think is very symptomatic of,
Oh, Jesus.
yeah,
Yeah. I guess
the
while
kind of
we're talking about that stuff.
the hog slop takeover
Yeah, so
of media.
it's this, and okay, maybe this is important to wider discourse as well. So we'll just briefly touch on it. We got this Canadian billionaire, James Grennan. He was kind of on radars 2022, 23, because he tried to start like these weird alt-right platforms here called the Centrist and New Zealand News Essentials. And they were just popping up on Twitter and they had two like ads, right? They appear in your feed and you're like, what is this? Like, another weird little website trying to pretend that it's a up-and-coming mainstream outlet, right? And it would be cool, and or like it wasn't just these two, right? There's a whole, I hesitate to say network because I don't think they're all connected, but a lot of them were. But a whole environment of these kind of sites which presented themselves in a very, I guess, news-friendly or modern news kind of way and appropriate the language of centrism. Or like facts or truth seeking, you click onto the sites and it would be like just rabid anti-vax stuff, like
And
and
tell
et
what,
cetera.
very derivative, and like it looks like a lot of the sort of fake news websites in terms of layout, but also in terms of the ways in which they're like scraping Yeah,
a bunch of
and
AI in there as well, as far
bunch
as
of
I can tell.
AI. They've auto-transcribed some of radio interviews I've done before, which was sort of like weird, which is how I came across them. And so this is like this weird cheap slop economy that's being wielded by a private equity guy.
Yeah, and kicked up in 2023 during the election, just to be clear.
And listen, private equity's always been like a demonic entity, but the billionaires are not okay. Like there is a sort of like a pilling, like this seems like pilled private equity.
Yeah, it is. It is. And like you're saying, they start huffing their own shit, right? Like, so this guy, it was reported on back in 2023. Like, I'm not going to say it wasn't covered at all, that this was the guy kind of behind these sites, but not sufficiently, I'd say, not really effectively either. And just in the last couple of weeks, he's taken on a 9% stake in NZME, which, you know, is the property that runs the Herald and Newstalk ZB and other ones, One
Yeah,
Roof,
because
I
it's
think.
time to like take Newstalk ZB like from a centrist, outlet to
Yeah,
real
so
like
centrist.
we're
And
running the
like, this is their claim, right? And this is the claim of right wingers ad infinitum, is that all New Zealand media is like communist, no matter what they do. Like, they can say, you know, all leftists should be shot. Like, you have Kerry Whittemore, whatever, saying this kind of shit,
Oh my
and
God.
then a whole bunch of right wingers will pile into comments saying like, well, that's just what the communists would do. You need to be more right wing. They
Our media, I mean, maybe I mentioned this before, but like the prevalence of sort of eugenics sterilization
Well, that's
discourse.
happened again recently this week with
Again,
Kerry Whittem,
it's
right?
like
Like talking about breeding people out.
I mean, Michael Laws was doing this in the pages of the Sunday Star Times like
Years ago.
20 odd years ago, but like we need to sterilize the poor.
Yeah, it's
It's been a
foul.
thing.
And but, you know, these people have found a firm friend in James Grennan. So that got announced that he'd bought a stake earlier in the week, and then I think only about 3 days later, he wrote a demand to clear the board out completely, like hire people to the board that he's choosing, including himself, and claiming that he's got a 37.5% stake behind him, as well as the 9% he personally holds. And this is just an outrageous power grab, and it like incredibly corrupt. Like, very clear that this is a billionaire just trying to get one of the main media outlets so that he can craft the discourse within this country and push it to the very far right. I want to be clear, to the very, very far right. Like, I think the New Zealand Herald and Newstalk ZB are far right as it is for some of the discourse that they regularly published, not even getting into the framing stuff around like news.
I would compare it to sort of like Murdoch tabloid trash, with horrible, like, I mean, the New Zealand Herald web is it's a horrible
Oh, it's
product.
garbage.
It's really like, so I guess the continuum to be into the sort of whatever AI, again, this is a guy who's sort of, leveraged himself in using whatever it is, the new tech that does, it's like Elon Musk in Twitter. Like it's good enough. It's passable.
Yeah.
If you are just sort of like feeding hogs, so like
Which
that's
is
the
often
model.
also AI bots, right? Like,
Yes, I think this also sort of again this comes back to there's this great article in The New Socialist by Gareth Watkins, AI, the new aesthetics of fascism, the way they love the slop because it's really about signaling, oh, we will dominate you, we will replace you. We will make Trump Gaza or the Free Speech Union with their horrible little 5-minute AI video about the real estate agent who didn't want to do a Te Reo, cultural competency course, or I forget the name of this, but the aesthetics are horrible. It's slop garbage, but it's really about signaling a desire to dominate and to crush the whatever. Journalistic, intellectual capacity to sort of imagine anything outside of whatever their AI slop fascist world.
I'd say not only are we going to kick you out of your jobs and replace you, we're going to replace you with trash because we can. Is really what the signal is about. At any rate, that's part of the wider kind of information environment we're finding ourselves in at the moment, around some of this, the consideration of use for terms like DEI or referring to DOGE. We have North American billionaires and discourse crafters over here intentionally trying to do it, and we have a cohort of people in politics and media and within our institutions who are more than happy to be the leading edge of that. So, to the topic of the day, and that is Doge. It is a department created over in the United States. Do you want to give us a quick rundown for those who maybe haven't heard about it or don't know the particulars of it for what it's doing in the United States and where it kind of came out of?
So this is a big thanks Obama moment. Thanks Obama for creating the e-vehicle tax credits that built Elon Musk's empire. Thanks Obama for launching Obamacare, such a garbaggio website that they had to create this digital office inside the executive, which is this mechanism by which Elon Musk has been installed into essentially the administration to let his test tube 19-year-old programmer eugenics wunderkinds, CRISPR babies. Sorry, all right, I'm being a little bit hyperbolic, but he's got a legion of Palantir and Tesla interns who are basically banging at the door of the core goods and digital commonwealth of the American government and bureaucracy, from the Treasury, from Social Security, and the Pentagon, and basically saying, what could these 19-year-olds armed with AI and programming skills, how could they find efficiency? Now, the thing about being a script kiddie, that's the sort of terminology for like being like a wunderkind programmer, is like, being a programmer is incredibly myopic. And that's like, it's a singular thing that you do, and that it has to be that way. So in the abstract, that skill set is one particular myopic skill set that might be useful in some other instance. But in terms of understanding like the social contract and the function of government and any sort of like democratic, sort of constitutional responsibilities that government has, it's a nightmare. So these kids don't know anything about, I mean, they come to the topic of money, which is this really complex things with the sort of like the sloganeering of crypto and Bitcoin. And so really what they're doing is they're cracking open the US government. And much like I kind of mentioned the whole cloud first thing, what that does, once you sort of put this kind of tech, you get the foot in the door, the way tech looks at it is as an opportunity to procure and to have access to data, which will allow them to create new products and new services that government will have to contract out to. And, there's, in theory, they could talk about efficiency gains. But what it's really doing is what the right-wing agenda of the post-stagflation 70s neoliberal turn has been all about, which is to strip government down and to, where there is an absolute crisis of profitability for capitalism, is to, strip mine our common social public trust and public protections for profit. So Doge has been an absolute disaster. They were promising to publish everything, all the efficiencies that they would gain on a website. It started with a Twitter feed, and then the website was posting all types of garbage. I mean, these guys aren't even putting out the website. They're like programmers. They're not even like running a website well. And of course, again, like Elon Musk is this guy who's like an isolated, on ketamine, constantly being feted as the great philosopher king, programmer genius of our time, is this incredibly sort of fragile to any sort of criticism. And it's been this weird sort of like vanity project. But here's where there is something kind of real. Like, he is able to use his Twitter X as this kind of grand stock manipulation machine and sort of crypto pumping machine, which does sort of like create a collective delusion or fantasy amongst those that believe that we need the tech to just come and fix everything, and that crypto or blockchain or AI will be the sort of basket of technologies that will replace and make government efficient. Like, he is able to sort of momentarily spin enough gold or do enough pumping of like the Tesla meme stock or the Doge shitcoin to make that somehow real. Because at the end of the day, for capital, those fetishistic powers of conjuring value is the most real thing about capitalism.
Although I think I saw something recently where like securities is like at a higher is being sold at a higher rate than any time since the big crash of 08.
We're coming to some set of like massive contradictions, which will, because again, AI is generally sort of like vaporous, expensive bloatware, where the promise and the productivity are just so misaligned. And I don't know in what scenario, like even with total US government capture, even with bailouts, like I feel like there's some huge economic sort of kind of contradictions that are going to come to some sort of like bubble bursting. But for now, this is the sort of like fantasy that Doge is fueled by, that we can take, the government bureaucracy, strip it down to, good enough mode, like Twitter, just barely sort of surviving, and let AI sort of fill the gaps. But they are really.
Hire a bunch of Nazis,
Yeah.
like make it a really good, a great place for white supremacists.
Yeah. And then there's all the DEI stuff. It's kind of hard to, because it's so sort of capricious and openly racist. And again, like I think of Adorno, that like fascism is unser is both stupid, dumb, and then it's a very serious thing. So we are sort of governed by the stupidities of their own sort of self-delusions about what it'll do. But then again, this is the sort of fetishistic quality of capital, that the thing that it, that is the most real is number go up, And the other thing that has just been happening in the last few days are changes to the rules of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, which is Elizabeth Warren's sort of big post Great Recession of 08, Great Financial Crisis, which was her sort of regulatory agency that would protect the average sort of retail investor from not just securities fraud, but things like crypto. They've managed to strip away the powers to. It's this very jerry-rigged thing that they've said, where the consumer front, the CFPB was geared towards protecting minority businesses, and it might be sex workers or people that didn't have access to banking. This is the so-called crisis of debanking. Think of Don Cheadle in Boogie Nights when he wanted to go legit. So this is because he was a porn actor. Okay, sorry. Well, all right. This is my old guy reference. But Don Cheadle in Boogie Nights, he couldn't get access to banking. The CFPB was there for those types of businesses. Now, the crypto people were like, oh no, we're the ones that are being debanked. We're the ones that are being persecuted. And so they've unraveled the rule, and that what they do is they do crime, they do money laundering, they do consumer harm. Okay, that's why they can't be banked, because they're crime tech. So they've unraveled the thing that prevents them from getting access to banking while restricting the protections of sort of under the sort of DEI rubric, stripping the protections that some of those other groups actually had. It's this insane perversion of what consumer protection should be all about.
I
But
think this is one of the key things about Doge or any number of these other initiatives, right? Is they're saying one thing, oh, we're going to go find efficiencies. We all love efficiencies. Everyone's been completely neoliberalized. So if, as soon as they hear that word, they're chomping at the bit, like, oh, give me those cuts. We'd really love to see the departments be more effective. That's not actually what the purpose of this stuff is.
and no one, no liberal, no center left person won't start by saying, sure, we would all love to see efficiencies, or we can all agree that government could be more efficient. It's like, what about the value of protect? I mean, ask the city of Wellington and what it's been through about. And again, we all fucking know, like, that those services will be contracted out. They will need to ha happen, and they will be contracted out at a much higher rate.
Yeah,
Like,
and we've seen this happen with horrible results, which we'll
that's
talk
right.
about more on the weekend, I guess, around school lunches or et cetera, et cetera.
Healthcare, you
Yeah.
name it. And because that's the prime thing here, is about breaking the public trust and making people cynical. And of course, there are many reasons to be cynical. I feel like in my old age, do you know the documentary filmmaker Frederick Wiseman? He's the guy that makes all those very slow verite documentaries that are called like public housing or city hall or, and it's just like, it's 3 hours long of just like watching bureaucrats or community people like in the housing project do their thing. And they are, look, and I guess I'm like a 20th century person. They are marvelous. They really tell the story of a whole society and the interconnectedness between, yes, civil servants, teachers, the firemen. Like there are these incredible homages. So if ever, I don't believe in re-education camps, but if one were theoretically to ever propose re-education camps, they should have Frederick Wiseman documentaries to rebuild this capacity to think about the public trust, because that's like, that is so broken. And that is even when DOGE fails, like that's what's being achieved. And the thing that comes back to crypto and, and the scammy Donald Trump presidency, like, the Democrats are not massively hypocritical, but, Trump is a massive hypocrite. But that's the beauty. That's the art of the deal, is being a hypocrite and not paying the unions or your Polish laborers or whatever it is. And so like Trump to that cynical average punter is like saying, well, look, maybe I will get on Trump coin or Doge or whatever sort of basket of cryptos that he's pumping by saying bullshit like, we're going to create a crypto strategic reserve, So that's the fundamental thing that we think it's a tech thing. It's not a tech thing. Tech is this mechanism to enable what it is that like the political right and oligarchs and capital have always wanted to do and must do under the terms of sort of like the crisis of profitability. All we can do is then like just strip mine the public trust to the last little bit of juice,
Yeah, and here in New Zealand, we've seen, actually, we had a push for something like this that came before Doge had been announced, which is the Ministry of Regulation, proposed and then implemented by David Seymour as part of the national government we currently have in power, alongside a range of removals of policy that were done in the name of efficiency, but were really to remove accountability. So I'm thinking of things like getting rid of regulation impact statements from incoming policy so that the government could pass it faster under urgency and not have to like address the evidence that the things they were doing weren't going to work because they are purely ideological.
Right. And this is the purpose of like, Simeon Brown appointing lobbyists and ignoring ministerial advices. They are
Same,
powering
it's the
through.
same sort of stuff.
They are breaking that. They want to break that mechanism. They want to break the ability of that to in any way impinge upon whatever
We've
the
talked about like
government.
political appointees for decades, right? But the extent to which they've happened under this government is the worst I think I've ever seen, maybe since the late 1980s or 90, early 1990s. But the ones happening now, they're not even, it's not just their mates that they're appointing. It is the worst people possible for the role. So I'm thinking, the recent appointments to the Human Rights Commission, which we've talked about in previous podcasts,
Richard Prebble, White
and
Tongue
the dis
Tribunal.
yeah, who's then just left, right? They're not
Yeah.
even
Oh.
in the game to like stick at it and destroy it from the inside. They're there to just to fuck around.
That stunt was just completely insane. I
They're
mean,
just
like,
absolutely absurd.
but what about if we had a New Zealand Doge? Might that fix the problem? What do you think?
Well, this is the thing. So, ministry regulation has just hit problem after problem, right? It's been called out for hypocrisy, similarly to Doge. They were talking about, how all the other ministries were running up these really high costs. They had too many high, like senior staff members, and then they were hiring a whole bunch of people at 150K plus for this entirely new ministry. Some of the impact statement stuff that was done was around the ministry itself. Came back to say this isn't a good idea. It's really hard to see, as you say, even what impact it's going to have. But it doesn't matter. Like failing is a success as well because it's just creating this discourse. It's taking up space. It's taking up public space and resource. And despite the fact that this already exists, there is already a raft of ways in which the National Party, in particular, like because they, you know, they are the ruling party here, like ACT and New Zealand First, obviously, like running around causing mayhem as well, and we hate them. The National Party are doing a range of activities that are being very successful at destroying trust in public services and attempting to create a discourse around privatization, right? Like, health service doesn't work, privatize it. Education system doesn't work, privatize it. This is a very clear pipeline that they are building on. And on top of that, they have recently looked at removing a whole bunch of funding for things like R&D and research. So I think Marsden Fund has run down. And then the one we're going to talk about today is the decision, I think in January, late January, to disestablish Callaghan Innovation, which is the crown entity that's government funded to do research and tech R&D for New Zealand. Can you tell us a little bit about Callaghan?
Oh man, so yeah, you mentioned Marsden, and I just sort of went into a fugue state. But yeah, no, we had the announcement that Marsden Humanities and Social Science panels were being scrapped for a focus on tech and innovation, the day that Jathan Sadowski, the great tech and AI critic, was in at Otago to give a speech. It really,
Yeah, find our episode with Jathan
oh
a
yeah.
few weeks back as well, by the way.
So Callaghan, yeah, I mean, look. I'm aware that research institutes are in the game of sort of fostering transfers of like knowledge from the public research sector into the sort of like startup and venture space. Like that's something that's been part of the business of what we do. And in fact, as we look at looming cuts to universities, Luxon's comment was, I think universities really need to think about how they're using their IP. So, like, you know, it's almost like we've been playing this game, and Callaghan was a part of that, and fostered a range of different sort of like science and tech and that sort of stuff. And I think, and again, I didn't follow the layoffs as closely as others, but I think it does speak to the quote innovation space is just like software driven, and because that's what venture wants, because like hardware or other sort of scientific innovations offer way lower returns. It's really just that
You
simple.
can't scam with them. You can't scam with
That's
them in
right.
the
That's
same
right.
way.
That's truly it. Like, I mean, name something that's come from Silicon Valley in the last 10 years that is sort of like a general societal. Remember when 3D printers were going to change everything? But even, you know, 3D printers seem like way more sort of hardware tech driven than, you know, Web3, AI, or AI healthcare, or any of these things that promise 100x returns. That's sort of what they're looking for in the VC space. So, I mean, I suppose we've seen, you know, again, from my outsider view, we've seen a clearing out of the kind of R&D that would, you know, theoretically be more substantive, and we have a rump left, and that rump is busy announcing. So this announcement
So
came out.
this came after the decision. So the decision was in January, and then in the last week, this kind of because Callaghan Innovation is pretty big, right? Get something, yeah, around 200 million funding a year. So it's going to take a little while to wind down. And there's a core group of people in the institution left, and a number of them have come out with what, Olivier, as a way to try as their last hurrah.
So this is actually amazing. I did not know that Callaghan Innovation was the umbrella or sponsor of a group called Web3 NZ. So Web3, remember Web3? I mean, I don't, it was the apes. It was and actually it's kind of crazy because so much of what Doge is premised on that blockchain and crypto can do they can do contracts, they can do governance. They can do tokens and shares, but it's about pumping apes and doges
And then doing a rug pull, right?
and doing rug pulls and doing wash trading and the explosion. So if we're going deep into the weeds, so the Bitcoin people are the ones that consume like the most carbon, and Bitcoin is not at all useful. It doesn't have any real world use cases. But I will, in a certain begrudging respect, say the Bitcoin people really do hate the shitcoin people because they think that the Bitcoin is like the God token. It's not. It's stupid. It sucks. It shouldn't really exist. But at least they're really kind of committed. They hate one, Ethereum. Ethereum was the one that started the sort of smart contracts, and you could issue one of 200 coin or one of 200 tokens to like determine who's going to be on the podcast this week and how we might pay
Oh
them.
God, this sounds like fucking hell.
You could create like an anarchist
Yeah,
ANCAP one of 200 DAO, a distributed autonomous organization. Anyway, so that was Ethereum, but there's a new one called Solana, which does much of that, but it's cheaper than Ethereum. And that's where all the disgusting shit, like truly, like content warning, okay? A guy lost on a rug pull a couple weeks ago, live streaming himself, said, God, I can't even say it, but basically decided to end his life on stream and said, I'm gonna do this. Please make a shit coin out of me. And the quote community did, okay? That's Solana. That's Solana. That's the one that
I hadn't heard that one. That's
yeah.
fucked.
That's the one that Trump has been very closely aligned to in the very sort of crypto pumps that he's doing. And I'm sorry to talk about that. And I'm so, you know, because but that is really like that is the
I think
space.
it's important to know, like, what the space.
That is this degenerate space. Like all the apes are gone, right? The apes were bad enough. All the apes are gone. We're in the shitcoin world. So Callahan Innovation, Web3 and Zed have announced a hackathon to create New Zealand's Doge. And they're leaning it, which is a nonsense set of
Like, it's
ideas.
absolutely meaningless. It's like, hey, what's a fucking buzzword? What can we do? We're Web3. We love this shit. Let's look at efficiencies. Austerity is fucking great. Let's fuck shit up.
It's,
And but not even doing it in a cool way.
yeah, it's cringe. It's very, very cringe. And it does to me speak to the larger problem of just bootlicking the empire. You know, because in a sense, like whatever, if number go up, if shiny object is derived from these centers of power that we have a sort of inferiority complex around, I think it has to be that more than sort of like hardcore red pilled sort of like, you know, groipers and sort of like tech fascists, although it could be they could be there in the mixed.
No, I think our own like ones at home, our homegrown Nazis and white supremacists tend to be like fucking idiots.
Yeah,
Like, I
chugs. The
yeah,
real chug
they're just
rag.
out there like in like wearing fucking black jackets and shit and carrying
Yeah.
around like skull masks. They're fucking embarrassing. But I mean, who knows, right?
I mean, I wouldn't want to discount that there aren't some the like Elon's because part of the Elon crew of 19-year-old wunderkinds, like, you know, they're whatever, they're into eugenics and they've got various have got histories of posting like extremely racist stuff. I wouldn't want to discount that there aren't some like people
Yeah.
there, but I've actually, you know, I've found the and I look, you know, this polemics from me might come off as really harsh because I, in a weird way, like I've found a lot of the New Zealand sort of like crypto or DAO or blockchain Web3 people to be just sort of like flat and optimistic and just deeply uncritical. And have probably never ever thought about like these bigger sets of questions or, you know, like what is money and why is it a public good and why should, you know, like there's the head of, I mean, maybe I'm drunk. This has gotten so bad that even Callahan Innovation has written a white paper about debanking. This self-victimization mythology that came from the likes of Marc Andreessen and, you know, like the big VCs crying about like, our crime tech can't get access to the main
Yeah,
rails of the banking system. It's like, yes, because you're doing crimes. You're doing crimes.
there's a reason for that. What's
Yeah.
really interesting is, you know, this is one being set up as a hackathon, right? Like, we're just like, hey, we're just gonna throw some money at some people, right? To like just fuck around.
Fuck
And
around and find out. Yep. I
yeah,
mean,
and they're like, they're not telling us what the prize is just yet. It's still under wraps, but people could take away the team could take away 25,000 in cash. But this is really interesting. And I don't know if you've seen this bit, but it
Yeah.
says that the winning group will also have flights and accommodation paid for to another develop event overseas named ETH Global.
Oh,
Are you aware of ETH Global?
yeah, ETH Global. I mean, I guess that's the sort of there are different. There's an Ethereum Foundation. There are these different sort of networks of like boot camps and developer meetups, and I don't know if ETH Global is Vitalik Buterin endorsed or, but this is kind of the sort of distributed global sort of network of like Web3 people. It's fascinating. Fluff Club. Do you remember Fluff Club?
No.
So, Fluff Club was a big event at the sort of cusp of Web3 in 2022, and they were one of the star tents at South by Southwest. And it was an Aotearoa, New Zealand-based Web3 startup, and it's based on rabbits. And
No.
it's a project of New Zealand and global rollerblading legend Brooke Howard-Smith. Do you know Brooke?
No.
And for any of y'all Y2K heads out there, he was the inventor of pointer shoes. You remember pointer shoes? They sort of had a bull logo. He's like the Tony Hawk of rollerblading. And he got it. Yeah, and he got it. Well, he's like a legend. And he got into sort of like talent management and comms and marketing and digital stuff. It will make sense that somebody would like that would like be really into like Web3 and emerging tech and stuff like that. So like, a lot of these people do think of themselves as like the global face of like the startup New Zealand, whatever space. And there are only a few sort of like big, they're only Elon Musk tweeting about them away from like a massive sort of like windfall and market cap valuation and whatever, whatever. So the dream, it's stupid, but it still persists, right? Like the Web3 dream still kind of persists, and you are seeing, and actually, our space very much sucks up to like Marc Andreessen, who's the head of
Well,
a16z.
Horowitz was here earlier in the year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He had a meeting with cabinet. I had no idea. Ben Horowitz is the son of David Horowitz, and David Horowitz is the first sort of like in the late 60s, he was like a radical leftist ally of the Black Panthers, who then pivoted to the right and became like one of the most sort of important figures in waging sort of like anti-communist, anti-campus left campaigns. So that's Ben Horowitz's old man. I mean, crimes of the father, who knows? But look, the Andreessen and Horowitz, they're both massive reactionaries, but if they take a shine to you, they can uplift your whole sector. And actually, the Select Committee on Finance and Expenditures did a sort of like white paper on crypto and Web3. This is back under the Labour government. This is under the auspices of my two Dunedin MPs, Ingrid Leary and Clarkey. And they put out a white paper that was written by Blockchain and Zed, and it was like, don't strangle the baby in the crib. We got to sandbox this beautiful emerging tech that might be part of the weightless economy, blah 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 blah. So, this stuff is the fantasy lives on, and I would say that again, however insane and not fit for purpose these ideas may be, like they do, there's still some sort of allure that might come down if Silicon Valley sprinkles some of its magic stuff on our local tech sector. So that's the rump of Callahan that's left.
Why have people with these failed ideas? Like, because it's been very clear about, the destruction that this kind of shit wreaks, right? Like, how have they managed to maintain such strong institutional positions?
I
Like, because
mean,
stuff like Blockchain and Zed is like across the major banks as well, isn't it?
So yeah, like Kevin Whitmore of Callahan he's been part of the sort of crypto startups. And I mean, I think, look, here's look, let me be as magnanimous and gracious to this as possible. So the reserve, All right, I will say that the select committee, I made a submission, and maybe it was too much in my vein of like the kind of criticism that this is my research area, but they didn't include any critical stuff in their submissions. Okay, but the Reserve Bank is going to write white papers. Select committees are going to write white papers, and we have a capitalist system, we have capitalist governments. People are going to sort of like take a optimistic and open view to things. The problem here, though, is just that we have industry groups that are lobbyists for like things like Binance, which is an organized like financial money laundering with shitty tokens not backed by anything. We know this. This is all on the record. SEC investigations have doubted, sorry, have put out in the public sphere all the dodgy accounting practices. We know this. Like, there's something about the lack or the rewards for lying in the tech space, in the software space, that still can produce like the goods. Like that's the lesson of Elon Musk. That's the sort of lying about what you're doing to get the electric vehicle credits, and then just sort of like upselling the lies. And that's the lesson of Sam Altman, who is just a ludicrous liar. But he's lying like a fox. So I think these fuzzy tech in particular, just it I mean, again, whether it's that sort of optimistic, open to change sort of instinct that our institutions are going to have. I mean, again, we're seeing this a little bit in the battle around AI in the university. Like if McKinsey or the sort of captains of the collective conscience of capitalism say this is the bright, exciting future, this is the sort of space and area that we need to be going, our institutions don't have the scrutiny or the chops to bring anything critical to bear on that. So and the line does go up. The line does go up, but I do think whatever, the AI bubble, the line's got to go down sometime this year. Right? So I mean, Microsoft is pulling back on contracts to build out data centers. So there's going to be some stuff happen, and it would be a pity that here we are.
Yeah, let's not get involved. Let's not be one of the victims of the rug pull, right?
Yes.
I guess final thought. What do you think is going to happen with this NZO stuff? Do you think it's going to do anything, if like
I
that
think
has an impact?
so. One of the funny things about Seymour's ministry is it's not really sort of like tech led, and I don't think we're as enamored culturally to this as, let's just say, the US. I still feel the lag. The cultural lag means that I'm not sure there's like a massive constituency for this. I will say, though, on campus, man, the lads are sports gambling, man. Like there are some sort of like big, sort of dodgy, sketchy tech crypto adjacent sort of transformations that may work their way through the culture. And I actually I like to tell this story. I have kids that work in retail, and one of them told me about a retail job where another young person came and gave them a CV, and among their range of interests that this young person, 20 years old, looking for a retail job, put was, "I have interests in, quote, passive income," which, no, what that means, bro, is you watch podcasts about passive income. You don't actually have passive income, but like, are we sort of like feeding this kind of like fantasy of crypto and pump into the culture enough? I don't know, but I still feel like there's got to be a cultural lag that if an NZ Doge thing were to happen, like it would strain credulity. So, but again, maybe I'm reverting back to the sort of New Zealand cultural exception, and with kiwi tinted glasses, I don't know.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Olivier Jutel. Been wonderful to have you with us.
It's been my pleasure. And if you want to get the one of 200 ANCAP DAO set up and like tokenize the podcast, I can help you with that.
Thank you
I'm
very much. I
academic. I
appreciate
need to
that.
look at my consultancy potential, my IP potential. Luxon's coming for the sector. This is how I saved the tertiary.
Well, hit us up in the Twitter comments if that's what you want, audience. If you've enjoyed this, like, share, subscribe, share, like, let people know that there are people having serious conversations about this stuff because they're not really happening anywhere else. That's been another episode of 1 of 200. We'll catch you next time.
If our faces are then I'm living in a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics is no distinction. The words far now is paid with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they quote this as a cost me or to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day. This vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road to hell.